Good morning and welcome to St. Nicholas Church for our Sunday Facebook service. And we're continuing this morning with our penultimate reading from the book of James. And we're reading from James chapter 3 verse 13 going up to 4 verse 3 and verses 7 and 8. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbour bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. Submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Come near to God, and he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, as we're thinking about this reading today, for me it's summarised by two words, and those words are come home. And before we look at this passage, I would like to read some words from the author Richard Foster. And these are coming from his book on prayer, which I would recommend to anybody, Prayer by Richard Foster. So let me just read from the opening chapter. God has graciously allowed me to catch a glimpse into his heart, and I want to share with you what I have seen. Today, the heart of God is an open wound of love. He aches over our distance and preoccupation. He mourns that we do not draw near to him. He grieves that we have forgotten him. He weeps over our obsession with muchness and manyness. He longs for our presence. And he is inviting you and me to come home. To come home to where we belong. To come home to that for which we were created. His arms are stretched out wide to receive us. His heart is enlarged to take us in. For too long we have been in a far country. A country of noise and hurry and crowds, a country of climb and push and shove, a country of frustration and fear and intimidation. And he welcomes us home, home to serenity and peace and joy, home to friendship and fellowship and openness, home to intimacy and acceptance and affirmation. Well, Richard Foster there talks about the country of push and shove, of frustration and fear, and I believe that's one of the things that James describes in our reading today. And conversely, that invitation to come home to intimacy, acceptance, affirmation is then what James is also offering us in the final verses that we read in our passage, come home. So James in our reading today describes four different actions that we can take in relation to God. We can resist God, or alternatively, we can submit, we can approach, and finally, we can humble ourselves. And James describes what happens if we do one or more of these things. What happens when we resist God, or what happens if we submit to him? What happens if we approach him? And finally, what happens if we humble ourselves before him, if we come home to the Father? Now, admittedly, this is quite a hard passage with harsh words, words like kill and covet and hatred, and references to envy and selfish ambition and even the demonic. And sometimes I think James puts his point across so forcefully that it's almost hard to stomach. But again, maybe this reminds us sometimes of the teaching of Jesus himself, James's brother. But ultimately, I think James is offering us some of the most amazing promises in Scripture. The promise that God will draw near to us, and the promise that he will lift us up. And in the midst of all the strong words, I feel that James is really warning us, firstly, about the danger of trusting in ourselves. a danger connected with those words selfish or selfish ambition that appear twice in chapter 3. And that's perhaps the destination of the far country that Richard Foster talks about. James is saying there's a danger in trusting in our own desires, in trusting in our own wisdom, in trusting in our own decisions, especially if they're going against God. And I think what James means when he talks about the other kind of wisdom, in quotes, in chapter 3, verse 15, the wisdom that he describes as earthly, unspiritual, even demonic, I think he's saying simply that if you choose to trust in these things, if you choose to go your own way, you cannot expect to also draw close to God. If you go to the far country, you can't expect to also come home. In a way, he's saying we're all very welcome to trust our own desires, to trust our own wisdom above all. But if we do so, James is saying that we will miss out on the grace that God gives to the humble. We remain in the far country instead of coming home. At the beginning of chapter 4, James depicts various unpleasant activities we might get ourselves into. Fights, quarrels, wanting things, not getting them. He even uses the word kill, which might have been because in the early church there would have been political activists, zealots, as they're called in the Bible, potentially activists against the Roman Empire of the time. And there could well have been people in the early church who had been involved in revolutionary activities or even political assassinations, people who would in fact have killed, hard as that is for us perhaps to imagine now. But James' point here is that so many things, so many actions, even on the outside, find their origins within the heart. And he pinpoints one source of all fights, quarrels, of not getting what you want, and that source is our desires, he says, in chapter 4, verse 1, our desires that battle within us, the inner area of our life, which God highlighted in the Ten Commandments when he asked us to obey even in the very depths of our heart by commanding us not to covet, a commandment that went way beyond any of the moral codes of the time. James is saying, just as the Old Testament has said, that outward behaviours find their root in the heart, within the coveting that goes on within the heart. I remember 12 years ago going on a quiet day at somewhere called Ashburnham, and this quiet day was led by an incredible lady named Charlene Boddy. And I remember on that day, as we were being encouraged to be quiet, to be still, that the longer we were still and silent, the more I became aware of a sense of unease within myself. Later on, I realised that it's the same unease that I sometimes feel if I'm at home and nobody's there and I have nothing to do, which doesn't happen that often, but if ever that happens, that sense of lack of activity, for whatever reason, I think for most of us in the 21st century, is uncomfortable. What causes fights and quarrels among you, James says? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? The fight and quarrel may not be a literal battle of words with somebody. It may simply be the fight and quarrel against, for example, being still before the Lord. As Richard Foster mentioned in the passage I read earlier, ours is a society obsessed with muchness and manyness. So many of us feel a need to be busy all the time. And that's something, of course, that we've been greatly challenged by over the last 18 months, when at times we've been confined to our homes for weeks on end. It's so hard to be still. But I wonder if, for us, this constant busyness is in fact one side effect of something which James, elsewhere in chapter 4, calls friendship with the world. Friendship with the world nowadays may mean simply going along with that constant busyness that causes interior unrest and eventually interior fights and quarrels, that fosters anxiety in our spirit, anxiety that can make it hard to receive God's grace. But in the context of prayer, James goes on to provide us with a solution. Submit yourselves then to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Because if we ever are in the process of bowing down to God, we may well find something. The devil, James in fact says, doing everything to stop us. And James is just saying here, continue to bow down. Continue to stay still before God. Continue to keep your mind focused on God. And as you do that, you are demonstrating active resistance to evil, to the devil even. And in fact, he will have to leave you. And back to that whole area of being still, I think if we are ever quiet before God, we find anxiety rising within us, that sense of unease at being still, we're reminded here by James that in fact there's an adversary who attempts to come between us and God. And James promises us that if we resist him, then that adversary will go. And 12 years on from that first quiet day at Ashburnham, I have attended other quiet days since, and I've had other experiences of being quiet. I've since found that actually in being still before God, if we give it enough time, actually a sense of unease will gradually leave, although it may take a while to get there. Come near to God, James says, and this is an incredible promise. He will come near to you. Come near to God and he will come near to you. It's as if once we've moved beyond a focus on ourself, selfishness, as James might say, once we've moved beyond fights and quarrels, be they exterior or interior, once we've moved beyond envy, once we've let go of pride so we can accept grace, we then step into God's presence and find he was just waiting for us to draw near. James encourages us to wash our hands and to purify our hearts. And for me, this image of hands and hearts speaks about the past and the future. We accept God's forgiveness for what we have done. Hand washing is that image of having the marks of what we have committed being washed away, our past made clean, something that's made possible through Christ. But at the same time, our future is redeemed. God comes to purify our hearts, to purify our motives, to purify what we intend to do in the future. God forgives our past and God redeems our future. James, in this passage, takes us through different movements. The movement of resistance, of trusting our own wisdom, the movement away from God. The movement, as Foster might say, to the far country. And then there's its alternative, and that's the movement towards God. The movement of submitting, of resisting the devil, of coming near and humbling ourselves, the movement of coming home. And in that movement towards God, we receive some incredible promises. The promise that the devil will flee from us, the promise that God will draw near to us, and finally the promise that he will lift us up. And I want to finish by reading a final passage from Richard Foster's book. And it's a passage which I believe I've read at St. Nicholas Church before, but it's a passage which I think bears hearing again. And there's an incredible picture here of what James is talking about, the picture of coming home to God the Father. And Foster says this: "One day a friend of mine was walking through a shopping mall with his two-year-old son. The child was in a particularly cantankerous mood, fussing and fuming. The frustrated father tried everything to quiet his son, but nothing seemed to help. The child simply would not obey. Then, under some special inspiration, the father scooped up his son and, holding him close to his chest, began singing an impromptu love song. None of the words rhymed. He sang off key, and yet, as best he could, this father began sharing his heart. 'I love you,' he sang. 'I'm so glad you're my boy. You make me happy. I like the way you laugh.' On they went from one store to the next. Quietly, the father continued singing off key and making up words that did not rhyme. The child relaxed and became still, listening to this strange and wonderful song. Finally, they finished shopping and went to the car. As the father opened the door and prepared to buckle his son into the car seat, the child lifted his head and said simply, 'Sing it to me again, Daddy. Sing it to me again.' Prayer is a little like that. With simplicity of heart, we allow ourselves to be gathered up into the arms of the Father and let him sing his love song over us. Amen."